Thank you very much. Good morning. Our colleague here said it best, and I'm just going to echo his words. I'm a child of the digital age, I'm a geek, and I'm going to talk tech. I'm warning you, it may involve math. But I really do not understand a lot of the stuff that was mentioned before. So I'm trying to not embarrass myself, and I'm going to try to make the conversations that we have relevant. But as we say back at the shop, it wouldn't be HBO if there was no movie. So let's allow Elric Bachmann transcend us to another place and tell us what it's all about.
Sysbit Digital Solutions, integrating open data spaces. Yeah. TechBit Data Solution Systems, creating unique cross-platform technologies. Infotron. Cloud-based disruptive platforms. Disrupting the cloud. Oh, I said cloud twice. Shit. Making the world a better place through cross-platform, business-facing, cloud. There's that cloud again. Infotron? What the fuck is Infotron? What is that? It's all just fucking meaningless words. Okay, no. Making the world a better place. Tell you the world a better place.
Make the world a better place. So how do we do that? So I'm going to try and do a couple of things today. First of all, I was told to try and convince you that cloud and security affect the way you do business. So we're going to talk a little bit about this. The second thing we're going to do is we're going to attempt to convince you again that the legacy of technologies still persists. Now, why does it persist? I'm going to try and convince you that it persists because we still need to make references to things that are familiar. The second thing is because we need to preserve our investments. So let's talk a little bit about what is familiar. So this is how cloud helps us do business in an easier way. So we have a number of things there. The synchronization of data across devices, that is something that is inevitable. In our business, what is shown on a computer has to be shown on our digital phone, has to be shown to a TV, and the latency between those is minimal. It's mostly driven by business agreement and by technology. So in other words, when we make a certain show available on the linear channel, it takes very little time before it is made available in our over-the-top. The video and music service, so there's very little differentiation these days between streaming product. We have to make available all product, and we have to make available product in a variety of formats and in the variety of playback capabilities. The third thing you see there is content backup. Mm-hmm. That we're going to talk a little bit about later on. That talks about our ability to play when you're really not connected. So offline playback is something that we need to be able to facilitate. And finally, applications. Now, I left that generic because what we're trying to do is we try to realize in the security world is that despite of the experience of viewing, we have to allow parallel experiences. So I'm going to use my 16-year-old son as a model of what's coming, unfortunately, and in his viewing experiences. And what we're going to realize is that viewing itself is only part of the experience. There is a parallel experience of commenting or participating in some social network while the viewing is happening. And there is also another experience, and those could be with different devices, of while viewing, participating into something else. Could be e-commerce, could be a parallel viewing experience, it can be other things like that. Now, there is nothing new in the flow of our business. We create content that becomes part of a workflow. We refer to it lovingly as pre-prod. That comes to storage and transcoding distribution, we know all that. Now, the challenge we have is to take this existing workflow and transfer it into a cloud-enabled world. I'm going to be careful to say that this is not going to be a cloud-only world, because it is inevitable, and this can become a matter of contention, but most of the times, the evolution of our business to cloud will be along the lines of a hybrid environment. It is highly unlikely that our business in a hurry will go to a cloud-only world. From a security perspective, that is rather tricky, because a security model that concentrates only on what we refer to as on-premises technology is one thing. A lot of us have done it. We know how to approach it. The technologies are mature, and frankly, experience is multi-year. When we move to a cloud only, there is a very significant leap of faith because of the differences of new technologies that are not mature, of business processes that have not been proven. Now, the complexity and what we have to evolve is somewhere in between. So what I'll be talking about is a migration from on-prem traditional workflows to a hybrid environment, which is going to be with us for a while, and then potentially, maybe, to an all-cloud environment. Now, let's talk a little bit about emerging trends. We saw before one of our colleagues talked about trends from a business perspective. These are trends that have to do with technology and how it really plays to security. So device and content are totally independent now. We want to be able to play any content to any device. And we want to develop the same set of code, same program, to operate on all devices. It will be totally unadvisable, to not use a much more root statement, to actually develop code device-dependent. Now, just to give you a clue, in our case, we're looking at 32 different devices. It's not just the operating systems you have to develop for iOS, for Android, for others. You have to develop for Hulu, for Roku, for Amazon, Fire Stick, for all of those. So if you just go into your head and try and count all of those variations, I'm telling you, in our case, it's 32. That means 32 devices that need to fit a common security model, 32 devices that need to provide you feedback of security posture, and 32 devices that need to be tested every time there is a variation, and we have plenty of those. The second thing is that these devices are now connected. So I'm not going to play much to everything flows and everything is connected. We know all that. But the reality from a security practitioner's perspective is that this is not a point-to-point connectivity anymore. This is not something that I'm broadcasting and you consuming. This is something that has a network of its own. So in where we see gaming going is that you as a player become a performer. You as a player will become part of this gaming world, and you will play for other people's enjoyment. So you're not going to be simply somebody who goes there and virtually shoots the bad zombies or whatever on earth it is, or you steal the car or whatever your game of choice is. But you will become an actor where others will be viewing, and they will be cheering you, or they'll be whatever the opposite is, they'll be jeering you, depending on what you do. A much more complicated environment to secure. The other thing is that the storage requirements for us to operate and to secure are immense. We do welcome the petabytes upon petabytes of data that organizations like DMB have, but for us to secure them, it takes not as much a knowledge of what's inside, but a knowledge of what you authorize to be retrieved and what you authorize to be written. We typically like to understand data, but it's one of those things that we also like to keep it at an arm's length, because we like to typically secure different layers, protocols, access packages, but not necessarily an intimate knowledge of data. Most of the times we're not successful into this kind of virtual divorce, but we're trying all the same. Over the top, expanding reach, nothing more to say there. Cloud authentication services,
and so on. Now, before I say about the negatives, this is where the good news, the negatives, I'm going to share a philosophical view with you. People say, is the cloud secure? I think the cloud is very secure. In certain cases, I think the cloud is more secure than what we have on our own premises. Why? Because they had to deal with much more stuff than we did. So you would argue that a military contingent that engages in war all the time is most likely better trained than the Swiss Navy. And if you don't think there is a Swiss Navy, there is. So all the same, I think there is tremendous capability. The question, though, becomes, how do you harness it? How do you make it part of your business and technical process? So let's talk about negative trends. The quality of service. So many a time we chuckle at home, you know, I pay a certain company for 100 megabit, and when I run the tester, I get, on a good day, 40, 50. I pay for 100. And when I argue, I do know the dynamics of, yeah, fiber end-to-end, but end-to-end only stops at the road. And I'm, 500 feet up the road, and I don't have fiber. So the dynamics, though, of you being able to just to demystify what you're going to spend your money at Christmas time, the dynamics of you being able to really consume high-definition TV or high-definition anything relies on your network's ability to actually retrieve it, despite the money that Samsung TVs and other manufacturers would like to entice you to pay, and despite the fact that we see a lot of competition in the areas of, oh, we do all our productions in high definition, we do all of this. We believe that this is coming, but the big obstacle to that is our own network capability to actually make it available to us. It is not about endpoint device, your TV, and it's not about our desire to make it available. Trust me, we would love to. It is about how do we get to it. So, legal compliance, support for offline model. I said before, what happens when we're not connected? In certain cases, we do allow, in certain devices and certain clients, we do allow for download and replay. But the digital standards management and the payment model for those is rather complex. So not to create too bleak a story, but I just wanted to say, this is what we have to live with. These are the trends from the business, and you're very familiar with that. You don't expect the security guy to tell you. And these are the trends from the technology that are coming out to formulate a security model. So now that you read the quote, I'm going to try and convince you that the security model, this is a little wordy, is driven by other things as well. In the traditional days when we said about security, the first thing we thought as security practitioners is, what do I have to secure? What do I have to build a fence around? That's what we used to do. We say, okay, these are the network boundaries, I'm going to build some firewalls, I'm going to do this stuff, all right? And we went about it. This is not the case anymore. The perimeter is becoming fluid. The perimeter of how far does it go is affected by mobile devices, is affected by the partnerships and the kinds of business deals that we enter that all of a sudden extend it. So even though you may say, okay, in my case, the HBO network is in these two data centers, all it takes is a business agreement. We extend our reach to this company, and we're going to make all our content available. Guess what? It just became bigger, much more complex. Now, the cloud itself does that to you. The biggest worry about the cloud is, where is our data? That is driven many times by regulators. That is driven by our ability to manage latency. Therefore, business, legal, and technical reasons. Where is our data? We're not going to go into that now. But the perimeter just became not necessarily unmanageable, but undefinable. So that's one thing you need to worry about. The second thing you need to be aware about is that you're dealing in a multi-tenanted model. That is where the savings come from. Now, AWS, or any provider, after all, and Azure, after all, we're a Microsoft building, will sell you a dedicated server if you so wish. But you will find that the differential between a dedicated server and a multi-tenanted server, such as a product as AWS S3, say, this typical storage product, it is dramatically different. So what is the challenge? The challenge is that we are now sharing. Now, all of us have been into some environment where we outsourced, we went into a Rackspace-like data center, we shared. But this is different because it's much more dynamic. So we have to build a model that now is aware of who am I sharing with and what is the restrictions that that's placing to me. Data stewardship and control. Okay, very simple. I'm going to distill this into a single sentence. Who owns this data? We wrangle with that problem a lot because, first of all, realizing what you have is one thing, but realizing who owns it and convincing that guy that he actually owns it and he is responsible for its retention, its management, and the regulatory complications, that's a whole different story. And then development in the cloud becomes very interesting. So let me tell you, the buzzword for this is a software-driven data center. The cloud does not have you deal anymore with hardware that you can hack and look at blinking lights. The hardware issues, whether you distribute your software to multiple parallel, what we call load balancing, multiple parallel instances of hardware, whether you create more of those or less of those, whether you place it where your customer is or closer to your customer and such, all that is driven by software. So the challenge from our developers is to understand that. Now, I was a developer a bunch of years ago. I didn't have to worry about any of this. I had to worry about algorithms. Yeah, I was working in C and C++ at the time, working for an airline. I didn't have to worry what they're going to do. That was somebody else's problem. It was network stuff. Who cares? Now the developer has to be aware of that. The developer has to understand the limitations of the platform that this thing will be deployed, its locality. It is dynamic or static characteristics. Does it grow as your load grows? Does it grow as your customers grow? And so on. So this is what we're dealing with. From a business perspective, our business people want more devices, more tablets, make it ubiquitous. And the applications become more complex. As I said, it is not just about playback. It's about the ability to say, I only watched half the episode, and now I'm going to switch devices, and I want to continue from where I left. Okay, and that has to become available without involving complex server-side controls. So the other thing is that there is so much information that we have to deal with. In many cases, we are not in charge of those applications. So let me give you an example. Many a time when you buy a TV, you may get with it a certain offering. You say, I buy Sony, I get HBO. I buy Samsung, I get Hulu, and so on, all right? That means that the content and the controls that go with our stuff is now managed within the TV network's software, firmware, and all other wares. So the security model takes a lot of trust to say, I'm going to require from that third party that I'm getting into this trust relationship information about what do they do with my stuff. Have they unbundled it? Have they changed it? When things play, all is well. When things break down, they get very interesting. So what we have as security people to put in our head is that we're not just dealing with the security of a movie or a song or a clip of some sort anyway, in different kind of formats. We're dealing also with the security of what goes around it. example, we will argue many a time, when somebody goes and registers for the 30 days free, this 30 days free HBO Now, and you submit certain information, and you establish viewing characteristics, that information is highly regulated. So it's my worry, and all yours, to be able to manage this and say, how do we make sure that this information is not compromised, not just for commercial purposes, but for regulatory purposes, and the penalties are substantial, or for the purposes of being able to make sense of it. Like all our colleagues said before, data that doesn't make sense has no value, so data has to be vetted. So it is our job as security practitioners to make sure that the data that you get has not been messed with, and at the same time, it is usable. Now, I promise to you, and I keep my promises, that I will convince you that the original thoughts of security still persist. All right, we talked about cloud. We talked about what the cloud brings to us. But we still have some fundamentals. You know, those of us that went to security school, okay, that wasn't money that badly spent. We still have those things to worry about. The data breach characteristics are similar. So the data breach in the cloud and the data breach on premises has the similar characteristics. Certain things are more attractive than others. Denial of service in the cloud, that means, you know, throwing a lot of requests into an application, hoping that you will overwhelm this application and bring it down. Now, I can tell you, we see those all the time, some of them more sophisticated than others. Now, that we used to see them before. Therefore, the kind of defenses that we deploy are similar. And the kind of defenses would be along the lines of intrusion detection, blacklisting of offending IP addresses, and all that stuff. So now you get to see how I was feeling when I was saying things that I would, when you were saying things that I could not follow. Identity compromises, we have plenty of those. So these have a couple of things that appear such. We have to always worry, especially when we try to enforce licensing or when we try to enforce subscriptions, or who is knocking on our door. How do we know who the customer is? Now, you say, what's the big deal? They have a user ID and a password. Well, you see, it's not that simple. And I wouldn't keep it simple because that justifies my salary. So what it really has to do with is this. How many sessions are you going to allow this user ID to play? I mean, there has to be a limit, all right? We do know that if I'm sitting in a dorm and I say, hey, that's my user ID and password, go for it. And that happens. We know. And in certain cases, we care. And in certain other cases, we don't care. But this is a security question. You have to ask yourselves, how much is going to be shared? Are you going to allow the same ID to appear right now from New York as well as China? Okay, if you do allow IDs to be shared within a family, legitimately, you know, mommy can be traveling in China, daddy is in the US. Where do you draw the line? These are complex identity security questions that, as you build a security model, need to be discussed. And by the way, as I'm trying to convince you, it was the same that we had to deal with before. Interfaces and APIs, the interface to our information and how we retrieve information, is still the same. One of the great things that we have to grapple with every single day is the transfer of even mezzanine files with unsecured protocols. We have tried so hard to get out of FTP, but realizing that FTP is still around because of legacy applications. And while we're trying slowly to make the transition to more secure protocols, it is not easy. So, as we're moving on, insider threats, you know, you've heard many a security presentation that says about the insider threats. Still the case, still dealing with that. And in addition, advanced persistent threats, this is what I refer to in passing as the nasties. Okay, this means somebody placing something in your network that doesn't do right now anything, but upon demand, it can. And, you know, all kinds of situations with that, botnets, this, that, the other. But those are the ones that really scare us. Because the typical defenses that we had, and we still have, are not particularly effective. Losing data or our ability to not deal well with the cloud provider creates a problem. So moving on quickly, what does that mean to us? So the only one buzzword that's going to be new today, and I'm going to try and introduce as a matter of thought, is something we'll call context-specific security. So why are we doing this? It is not something, don't run to Google and type it, okay? I just came up with it. It's a philosophy. It's not something you just, you know, give me some of that. It's not. It's a philosophy. The philosophy is, now that the boundaries are not defined and they change as configuration changes, or they change because AWS decided to open a new region, or they change because of all these characteristics, we say that we have to rely on certain principles. And the principles are the following. You cannot secure what you don't know. Inventory is paramount. You got to know what you have and where do you have it, whether that's an application or data or anything. This is very practical, guys. This is not a matter of, it's philosophical, yet not too philosophical. You have to have a clear understanding of where your data is. Then you have to assign to it some sort of a risk factor. Okay, the second realization, sad realization at 11:30 in the morning is we can't secure everything. So let's worry about what we really have to worry about. So there's going to be, either you're going to shut it all down, which will get you out of business, but you'll be secure, or you have to realize these are the data sets, the endpoints, and the applications that I really need to secure based on some risk assignment. So I inventory, I think of them from a risk perspective, and I decide that my security model will concentrate on those. Now, you need to consider your whole perimeter. So business partners, affiliates, associates, you name it, home workers, third-party production companies, locations, filming crews, all that is part of your perimeter. So your inventory needs to count for all of that. And then, that's where we play. That's the most important thing for us security practitioners, but you'll understand when we do that to you, make it a business problem. So, joking apart, we said that the most important part is to assign responsibility to someone. So what you do is you make sure that your perception of risk is the same as the business perception of risk. I have tried many a time in my life to convince people to consider what we used to call in economic school value at risk. I failed miserably, and I won't try anymore. It's a good theory, but in practice, to assign a value to a risk-based proposition is very difficult, unless the organization has a lot of metrics over a lot of time. So we're not going to do that. We're going to assign a severity. And we're going to agree with the business about that severity. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, this is our subscriber data. It's really important. If that leaks, we lose a lot of money and we may get fined. You agree, business owner? Yes, I do. So we're going to secure it. And the restrictions we're going to place by means of the security model are the following. Retention time. We're going to control who has access. We're going to store it in a secure place. We're going to maintain logs. All that stuff that traditional security used to do, and we're going to apply it in an understanding, common understanding with a business owner. The other thing we're going to do, and the contextual security plays very well to that, is that anytime we roll out something to the cloud, we're going to make sure that it fits certain characteristics. Now, in the old days, we used to say, oh, these are the standards, and we're going to make sure that you adhere to these standards, and as long as you adhere to these standards, the code is reasonably secure. Can't do that anymore, guys, because, remember, the code now encapsulates the network. So we are moving to a much more dynamic validation of our code. So the dynamic validation of our code moves away from what we used to do in the legacy days. And while it's much more complex, it has to take all these things in account. This is security validation of the code as the code operates out there. So it is not enough to say, I did a scan of the Java code and I didn't find any bad stuff, the word password or any such. Now what we're doing is we're moving to say, while this is running, under the configuration that it was running, I want you to pass me back information. Are you overwhelmed? HTTP traffic. Are you okay with the configuration of the bus that you're supposed to operate on? Are you leaking memory? And all these things that we're now building in the code to give us back runtime feedback. This is not necessarily securing the code. This is the means to analyze the code as the code operates. And this is a big transformation for us from the perspective of what we were traditionally doing. So, wrapping it up. Context-based security, some elements of the old days, but many elements of the new days that come together. Necessary to understand where our data is, assign some risk-based factor to it. Realization that you cannot secure everything, secure what matters. Understand that code encapsulates network configurations now in this cloud world, and build an assessment of the code that has runtime characteristics. There are a lot of companies that are now emerging in this area. They're not mature. So some of that will come from within by building debugs or whatever you want to call them in your code. Some of them will come by means of acquiring some software. Now, last thing today, other than thanking you for your time and patience, many people wonder what we do. Why are we here, security people? So let me tell you. Try again with audio this time.
Do? System architecture, networking, and security. While you were busy minoring in gender studies and singing a cappella at Sarah Lawrence, I was gaining root access to NSA servers. I was one click away from starting a second Iranian revolution.
I actually went to Vassar.
I prevent cross-site scripting. I monitor for DDoS attacks, emergency database rollbacks, and faulty transaction handlings. The internet, heard of it, transfers half a petabyte of data every minute. Do you have any idea how that happens? All those U-porn ones and zeros streaming directly to your shitty little smartphone day after day. Every dipshit shits his pants if he can't get the new dubstep Skrillex remix in under 12 seconds. It's not magic, it's talent and sweat. People like me ensuring your packets get delivered unsniffed. So what do? I make sure that one bad config on one key component doesn't bankrupt the entire fucking company. That's what the fuck I do.
Stephen Verdakis, thank you so much. Great peek inside the box. Thank you.